6. The Tertiary Seraphim. In the same manner as their fellows, these angels are created serially and in 7 reflective types, but these types are not assigned individually to the separate services of the superuniverse administrators. All tertiary seraphim are collectively assigned to the trinitized sons of attainment, and these ascendant sons use them interchangeably. That is, the mighty messengers can and do utilize any of the tertiary types, and so do their coordinates, those high in authority and those without name and number. These 7 types of tertiary seraphim are 1. The significance of origins. The ascendant trinitized sons of a superuniverse government are charged with the responsibility of dealing with all issues growing out of the origin of any individual, race, or world, and the significance of origin is the paramount question in all our plans for the cosmic advancement of the living creatures of the realm. All relationships and the application of ethics grow out of the fundamental facts of origin. Origin is the basis of the relational reaction of the gods. Always does the conjoint actor take note of the man, in what manner he was born. With the higher descendant beings, origin is simply a fact to be ascertained, but with the ascending beings, including the lower orders of angels, the nature and circumstances of origin are not always so clear, though of equally vital importance at almost every turn of universe affairs. Hence the value of having at our disposal a series of reflective seraphim who can instantly portray anything required respecting the genesis of any being in either the central universe or throughout the entire realm of a superuniverse. The significance of origins are the living, ready reference genealogies of the vast hosts of beings, men, angels, and others, who inhabit the 7 superuniverses. They are always ready to supply their superiors with an up-to-date, replete, and trustworthy estimate of the ancestral factors and the current actual status of any individual on any world of their respective superuniverses, and their computation of possessed facts is always up to the minute. 2. The Memory of Mercy. These are the actual, full and replete, living records of the mercy which has been extended to individuals and races by the tender ministrations of the instrumentalities of the Infinite Spirit in the mission of adapting the justice of righteousness to the status of the realms, as disclosed by the portrayals of the significance of origins. The memory of mercy discloses the moral debt of the children of mercy, their spiritual liabilities, to be set down against their assets of the saving provision established by the sons of God. In revealing the Father's pre-existent mercy, the sons of God establish the necessary credit to ensure the survival of all. And then, in accordance with the findings of the significance of origins, a mercy credit is established for the survival of each rational creature, a credit of lavish proportions, and one of sufficient grace to ensure the survival of every soul who really desires divine citizenship. The memory of mercy is a living trial balance, a current statement of your account with the supernatural forces of the realms. These are the living records of mercy ministration, which are read into the testimony of the courts of Uversa, when each individual's right to unending life comes up for adjudication, when thrones are cast up and the Ancients of Days are seated. The broadcasts of Uversa issue and come forth from before them, thousands upon thousands minister to them, and 10,000 times 10,000 stand before them. The judgment is set, and the books are opened. And the books which are opened on such a momentous occasion are the living records of the tertiary seraphim of the superuniverses. The formal records are on file to corroborate the testimony of the memories of mercy, if they are required. The memory of mercy must show that the saving credit established by the sons of God has been fully and faithfully paid out in the loving ministry of the patient personalities of the third source and center. But when mercy is exhausted, when the memory thereof testifies to its depletion, then does justice prevail and righteousness decree. For mercy is not to be thrust upon those who despise it. Mercy is not a gift to be trampled underfoot by the persistent rebels of time. Nevertheless, though mercy is thus precious and dearly bestowed, your individual drawing credits are always far in excess of your ability to exhaust the reserve if you are sincere of purpose and honest of heart. The Mercy Reflectors, with their tertiary associates, engage in numerous superuniverse ministries, including the teaching of the ascending creatures. Among many other things, the significance of origins teach the ascenders how to apply spirit ethics, and following such training, the memories of mercy teach them how to be truly merciful. While the spirit techniques of mercy ministry are beyond your concept, you should even now understand that mercy is a quality of growth. You should realize that there is a great reward of personal satisfaction in being first just, next fair, then patient, then kind, and then on that foundation, if you choose and have it in your heart, you can take the next step and really show mercy. But you cannot exhibit mercy in and of itself. These steps must be traversed, otherwise there can be no genuine mercy. There may be patronage, condescension, or charity, even pity, but not mercy. True mercy comes only as the beautiful climax to these preceding adjuncts to group understanding, mutual appreciation, fraternal fellowship, spirit communion, and divine harmony. 3. The import of time. Time is the one universal endowment of all will creatures. It is the one talent entrusted to all intelligent beings. You all have time in which to ensure your survival, and time is fatally squandered only when it is buried in neglect, when you fail so to utilize it as to make certain the survival of your soul. Failure to improve one's time to the fullest extent possible does not impose fatal penalties. It merely retards the pilgrim of time in his journey of ascent. If survival is gained, all other losses can be retrieved. In the assignment of trusts, the counsel of the imports of time is invaluable. Time is a vital factor in everything this side of Havona and Paradise. In the final judgment before the Ancients of Days, time is an element of evidence. The imports of time must always afford testimony to show that every defendant has had ample time for making decisions, achieving choice. These time evaluators are also the secret of prophecy. They portray the element of time which will be required in the completion of any undertaking, and they are just as dependable as indicators as are the Frandalanks and Chronaldecks of other living orders. The gods foresee, hence foreknow, but the ascendant authorities of the universes of time must consult the imports of time to be able to forecast events of the future. You will first encounter these beings on the mansion worlds, and they will there instruct you in the advantageous use of that which you call time, both in its positive employment, work, and in its negative utilization, rest. Both uses of time are important. 4. The solemnity of trust. Trust is the crucial test of will creatures. Trustworthiness is the true measure of self-mastery, character. These Sakonophim accomplish a double purpose in the economy of the superuniverses. They portray to all will creatures the sense of the obligation, sacredness, and solemnity of trust. At the same time, they unerringly reflect to the governing authorities the exact trustworthiness of any candidate for confidence or trust. On your rancho, you grotesquely essay to read character and to estimate specific abilities, but on Uversa, we actually do these things in perfection. These Sakonophim weigh trustworthiness in the living scales of unerring character appraisal, and when they have looked at you, we have only to look at them to know the limitations of your ability to discharge responsibility, execute trust, and fulfill missions. Your assets of trustworthiness are clearly set forth alongside your liabilities of possible default or betrayal. It is the plan of your superiors to advance you by augmented trusts just as fast as your character is sufficiently developed to gracefully bear these added responsibilities. But to overload the individual only courts disaster and ensures disappointment. and the mistake of placing responsibility prematurely upon either man or angel may be avoided by utilizing the ministry of these infallible estimators of the trust capacity of the individuals of time and space. These seconophim ever accompany those high in authority, and never do these executives make assignments until their candidates have been weighed in the seraphic balances and pronounced not wanting. 5. The sanctity of service. The privilege of service immediately follows the discovery of trustworthiness. Nothing can stand between you and opportunity for increased service except your own untrustworthiness, your lack of capacity for appreciation of the solemnity of trust. Service, purposeful service, not slavery, is productive of the highest satisfaction and is expressive of the divinest dignity. Service, more service, increased service, difficult service, adventurous service, and at last divine and perfect service is the goal of time and the destination of space. But ever will the play cycles of time alternate with the service cycles of progress, and after the service of time there follows the superservice of eternity. During the play of time you should envision the work of eternity, even as you will, during the service of eternity, reminisce the play of time. The universal economy is based on intake and output. Throughout the eternal career, you will never encounter monotony of inaction or stagnation of personality. Progress is made possible by inherent motion. Advancement grows out of the divine capacity for action, and achievement is the child of imaginative adventure. But inherent in this capacity for achievement is the responsibility of ethics, the necessity for recognizing that the world and the universe are filled with a multitude of differing types of beings. All of this magnificent creation, including yourself, was not made just for you. This is not an egocentric universe. The gods have decreed it is more blessed to give than to receive, and said your master son, "He who would be greatest among you, let him be server of all." The real nature of any service, be it rendered by man or angel, is fully revealed in the faces of these seraphic service indicators, the sanctities of service. The full analysis of the true and of the hidden motives is clearly shown. These angels are indeed the mind readers, heart searchers, and soul revealers of the universe. Mortals may employ words to conceal their thoughts, but these high seconophim lay bare the deep motives of the human heart and of the angelic mind. 6 and 7. The Secret of Greatness and the Soul of Goodness. The ascending pilgrims, having awakened to the import of time, the way is prepared for the realization of the solemnity of trust and for the appreciation of the sanctity of service. While these are the moral elements of greatness, there are also secrets of greatness. When the spiritual tests of greatness are applied, the moral elements are not disregarded, but the quality of unselfishness revealed in disinterested labor for the welfare of one's earthly fellows, particularly worthy beings in need and in distress, that is the real measure of planetary greatness. And the manifestation of greatness on a world like Urantia is the exhibition of self-control. The great man is not he who takes a city or overthrows a nation, but rather he who subdues his own tongue. Greatness is synonymous with divinity. God is supremely great and good. Greatness and goodness simply cannot be divorced. They are forever made one in God. This truth is literally and strikingly illustrated by the reflective interdependence of the secret of greatness and the soul of goodness, for neither can function without the other. In reflecting other qualities of divinity, the superuniverse seconophim can and do act alone, but the reflective estimates of greatness and of goodness appear to be inseparable. Hence, on any world, in any universe, must these reflectors of greatness and of goodness work together, always showing a dual and mutually dependent report of every being upon whom they focalize. Greatness cannot be estimated without knowing the content of goodness, while goodness cannot be portrayed without exhibiting its inherent and divine greatness. The estimate of greatness varies from sphere to sphere. To be great is to be godlike, and since the quality of greatness is wholly determined by the content of goodness, it follows that, even in your present human estate, if you can through grace become good, you are thereby becoming great. The more steadfastly you behold and the more persistently you pursue the concepts of divine goodness, the more certainly will you grow in greatness, in true magnitude of genuine survival character.